Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's never the underdog. Yes, sir. It's never the underdog. Yes, sir. It's never the underdog.
What's up, Duke fans? Welcome to the Devil's Den podcast. I'm your host, Josh Smith, joined by my co-host, Raul and Shu. I'm happy to welcome John Watson from the Devil's Den with us. Hope all y'all are having a happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year's is when this gets ready to drop. We figured we would just kind of recap a little bit of the season. Wanted to get John's thoughts on that, and then we'll jump in and do our ACC preview. Maybe do a little bit of like predictions and all ACC stuff. So first off, John, you're coming at us from Mexico. Holidays doing pretty well for you here. What's been kind of your takeaway so far on the season? I know it's been a little up and down. I think overall Duke's pretty fine sitting at 8-3, but maybe as a preseason top three team, the expectations were a little higher. Where's this kind of dust settling with you right now?
I think it's just like you said, it's been up and down. They're very close to being, they could really be 11-0 if you think about it. I mean, you know, they had Arizona down, they had them beat at home, and then they just didn't finish. Arkansas, they didn't play well at all, had a chance to take a lead late, didn't do it. And then Georgia Tech, they should have beat them. You know, you lose Tyrese Proctor in the first minute, that probably set them back a little bit. But I mean, it hasn't been pretty throughout. I mean, I think you guys have probably talked about it a bunch, but you know, they're not the dominant team everyone expected, because the sophomores have not become all worldly from year one to year two. They really missed Derek Lively. They're still waiting for Mark Mitchell to show up this season. And they don't have a lot where they're hurting. They just don't have a lot of answers. They're starting to figure it out, but it takes time. And, you know, I just keep telling people who have talked on the message boards, who I've talked to in private, that, you know, this program brought back one player last year. They won 27 games last year with a brand new team. They lost their most impactful player last year. They lost the player that would have helped the most aside from Lively this year. And it's not excuses, but, you know, the reality is that there's still a bunch of sophomores who are good college players, but there's no dominant NBA talent on this team.
Yeah.
And they're playing a bunch of 24, 25 year olds with, you know, the COVID rules still. I mean, these are things you got to consider, not to mention you've got a coach who is getting ready to coach what, his 40th game. There's a lot of variables against them. And again, we're talking about a couple bad possessions from being 11-0 and probably ranked number one in the country. But it's not what we've seen in the past where, you know, everyone started going, okay, well, we've lost all these freshmen. Now we're getting them all back. And it's going to be such a great season. And, you know, there's a reason they came back.
Sure. Right.
You know, that's what people need to realize. It's not like, you know, Jason Williams was great his freshman year and then came back and was just all world his second year. But I mean, that's just not on this roster. And so I'm not down on them. I think they're going to be very good. I think they're going to make noise in March, but it's a journey and it's not going to be immediate returns. And I think that's what we're seeing.
Yeah. Great point too about the sophomores. I think we all like, you know, obviously freshman to sophomore is typically kind of a big jump, but you never really know like how you're going to be able to quantify that and what that's really going to look like. And I think these expectations were coming from a place where all of the freshmen made the big jump as a sophomore, right? And we really kind of haven't seen that. I think Brian Geisinger, when he was on, made a great point about, you know, look, first real game of the season against Arizona, they come in and they're just saying, we're not guarding Ryan Young. We're not really going to guard Mark Mitchell. And Arkansas just fully committed to saying, we're not guarding him at all. That puts a big wrench in how you're wanting to play and how you're wanting to defend and all of these things. And it's taken a little bit to figure things out. Did get a big win over Baylor, which was nice. It's nice to see the backcourt kind of really starting to step up. You know, with Proctor being out, that's kind of created a little bit of wrinkle. We can talk about that for just a second here. When he comes back, John, do you think, I mean, I think it's obviously he's probably going to have to come back and start, but how do you see the backcourt sort of complementing each other now? Does this send Foster back to the bench? How does he adapt to that role? Like, is there any concern in that, or do you think that it should be pretty seamless, or where do you stand?
I think you're going to have to send somebody back to the bench. You know, theory would be you could, there are a bunch of big guards. So, I mean, you could pretty much play four guards around Flip.
Yeah.
And that lineup, and that lineup may actually come into existence pretty quickly. If they're not, you know, if Sean Stewart's not going to be passable on defense, if Christian Reeves is going to continue to be hurt, I mean, really, that's not a bad lineup at times, especially, I mean, certainly against Queens and some of the other smaller teams are going to play in the ACC. But, you know, when Proctor comes back, I would assume they're going to put the ball back in his hands. But I was really impressed with the way Caleb Foster has played the last couple of games. I mean, under control, went to the rim when he needed to, didn't force anything, made the simple pass, didn't make the flashy pass all the time. Moved without the ball, and I do wonder how he's going to be impacted when Proctor comes back in and takes the ball. Maybe they move Proctor off the ball, but I don't think so. I mean, he's much better on the ball. So it's going to be interesting, but I, you know, college basketball is a guards game, and Duke is going to prove that they've got five starting caliber guards. And Jalen Blakes has had some really good moments this year as well. I mean, that's what, six guards, five guards? I mean, that's not bad, especially when you're thinking about, you know, getting into March and everything else. So,
and when you factor in how Roach has been playing, who's been just on a tear, and now that McCain's really found it and it seems comfortable out there. I know, like, you know, a couple of weeks ago it was like, well, do you consider kind of moving McCain to the bench and letting Foster come in? And then Proctor gets hurt, McCain goes off. Foster is probably our fastest guard with the ball. That's maybe controversial, but he's really quick. He's probably our best next to Jeremy, maybe right behind Jeremy in terms of being able to finish at the rim. All of these things get interesting when you're because it's the five out is the problem, right? We've done the five out, but we can't really unlock it because teams are just saying that, well, if you're going to play Mark out there or if you're going to put Ryan Young out there, we're eliminating
five out, right?
We're just not going to guard those guys. So then it becomes a kind of a cluster. If you put Foster there and just slide everyone down and run Proctor, Roach, McCain, Foster, and Flip, I'm not saying you start that. I'm not saying you play that lineup 30 minutes, but if you play it 10 minutes a game, they might not, they're not going to get a ton of stops maybe, but it's going to be really difficult for teams to guard them. And I think of like a Caleb and Jeremy being able to drive the ball in that lineup.
It's
going to be pretty tough. I mean, the driving lanes are going to be wide open. You know, I would be interesting for me to see if we kind of break that out a little bit against Cuse, definitely against Queens, but Cuse, you know, to see kind of like what you got. I guess they are kind of playing a man these days, but yeah. I don't know, we'll see.
I wonder how much you would even lose defensively with that. I mean, obviously Mitchell is an important defender, but one of the things that's been keeping the defense afloat is actually the defensive rebounding. And Mitchell hasn't been rebounding at all. Right. So are you really even losing that much? And is it offset by the offensive gains?
Yeah. Yeah. Potentially. I mean,
the worst is you just won't like Foster guarding a 6'8", 6'9" yeah. forward in the, some dude.
Yeah. But how many college teams are really playing like two guys over 6'8" anyway? A lot of them are playing like a 6'8" center.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. But we'll just put McCain at the five, right? Since he's got the most rebounds as the guard, we'll just let him kind of get the garbage buckets on there.
It's positionless anyways, right?
Yeah.
Go
ahead, John.
Yeah, I was going to say one thing I've really been impressed with, and I started really seeing it against Baylor, especially when they started rallying and coming back, the young guards are putting a body on somebody when the ball goes up. I mean, they are boxing out. And to your point earlier, Raul, I haven't seen Mark Mitchell box out anybody.
Yeah.
Flip doesn't really box. Flip's ready just to go straight up and get it. Ryan Young will put himself into you. But, the guards have done really well with that. Now, there's not a super athlete who's going to come in and fly in as a weak side rebound or anything. But, you can survive in today's college game doing that for extended periods. And I know John loves Mark Mitchell, and he believes in him. I mean, I can tell you last year before they started the season, I kept talking to, we're talking about, what is this class setting up for, the current class with Flag and everybody. And I said, obviously you're going to be losing Lively. You're going to lose Flip. You're going to lose Proctor. And he goes, don't forget about Mark Mitchell. And I'm going, okay.
Yeah.
No. He's 6'8". He's got a motor that doesn't, just on and on and on. And the comparison was not apples to apples, but it was the kid who played at Scotty Barnes, the kid who played at FSU a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Not really offensive, but who could do a lot of things. It's just, I think the offensive mindset this year has really gotten to Mitchell.
Yeah.
And he's not doing a lot of what made him really good. I mean, he should be, with his athleticism, his quickness, his versatility, he should be a really good stretch four, but he's turning into college Lance Thomas, which is invaluable as a glue guy, as a role guy, but they need more.
Right. A lot more. Right. Especially if you're going to shoot 18 threes, right? You got to be making a few of those. And that's the weirdest thing is, mechanically, we all have known that, the mechanics just aren't ideal, right? The shot is like really flat. It's really hard. But even that, last year, he was a 40% three-point shooter, like two-thirds of the season. And I think he finished 35%. There's no reason why he needs to be one of 18.
Year, it seemed like a lot of times he didn't hesitate to shoot. I think this year it's more like you guys, it's a mental thing. It's in his head right now. It's snake bit.
Yeah, and it's where he's taking the shots from too. A lot of his makes last year were from the corners.
Yeah.
And he keeps taking wing threes now. And a lot of them are like he's almost waiting until somebody kind of comes out to contest them, and then he's taking the shot.
Yeah.
There's a defined pause in it. I mean, he gets it, and you can almost see him start his motion and then just stop first. I mean, it's a millisecond. But you can see it. He's stopping. And then it's like, oh, God, I guess I got to throw it up there. And it's, I mean, I hate to say it, but that's what it looks like. And that is not what they need. They need him to be confident, which is why I think you're seeing Shire tell him, you got to stay with this. You got to stay with this. Keep shooting. Keep shooting. It's the same thing they told Trey Jones.
Yeah.
And problem is there's nobody to fix him. Because, TJ Power is a much better shooter, obviously, but I mean, the 2 minutes he played against Baylor, he got shoved from one side of the paint to the other.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not the answer.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got to shoot him. It's hard because it's like, typically you want to get an open shot, but if all of your shots are open, it's like, that's kind of what we ran into the other night. Whereas we don't really want him leading the team in shot attempts, but you also have to take open shots. But if every time you touch the ball, you're open, you can't shoot it. It makes it a little bit hard.
It's our leaky black conundrum, right? Like
it is a little bit of that. Yeah, it is a little bit of that.
Like you need him out there for defense and for all those things, glue guy and everything else. But teams are basically leaving him open. And as you guys said, I mean, sometimes you're just kind of forced if you're going to be that open.
Well, it makes it where he needs to hit the twos at a high rate, right? Like the finishing around the rim, like he has to have that going for him. And that's the weird thing is, and John, you've probably seen this too. I think you've even tweeted a few times, like, is he still a little hurt? Is he still, because he'll go like 30 minutes and you won't see any lift. And then he'll just have two like massive, just like dunks in traffic or like dunks at the rim. And it's like, well, wait a minute, if you can do that. Let's start with that, right? Let's start
go to the Georgia Tech game. When he got the technical foul for the dunks, the first one he had some pretty good lift. The second one looked like he cleared the Durham phone book, but he's just long and was able to dunk it that way. I mean, it's he did have off-season knee surgery. He didn't get the full off-season. You know, you say you don't want him leading the team in shots. I don't think that's remotely arguable. I mean, what I would like him leading the team in or being close to the top is fouls drawn and free throws.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to hit threes. Great. You're pretty good slashing for a 6'8", 6'9" guy. Go to the rim and draw contact.
Yeah.
If nothing else, you're going to draw a secondary defender, hopefully. And, you know, the guards have been pretty good rebounding. I mean, McCain's averaging however many it is.
Yeah, it's been great.
You know, just – They're finding ways to utilize him, as I'm sure Geisinger talked about, and as I know Shire's talked about. It's just it's going to take a while, and it's an imperfect roster. On paper, it looked great, but you know, it's just these are kids, and they're growing up. It's going to take a while.
Yeah, and there's still time for it. And like we have talked about that, I won't get too deep in that, but we did see some stuff over the last two games of how he was used more in that short role. He was doing things a lot quicker and faster. Getting him moved around. He had some dunker stuff spot with him and Flip. I love
attacking
all of
the space when he's left open.
You know, I think it's coming of how they're going to try to figure that out. But yeah, there's no Lively walking through the door, right? There is no shot blocker coming in. You're not going to be able to fix the shot during the season. You just kind of have to live with the form. It is what it is. But, you know, I think there's still some room for optimism. And, you know, I know we're sitting at 0-1 right now, but we'll get in here and talk about the ACC preview a little bit. Before we do that, let's take just a quick little break here.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With Fuel Cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the ACC preview. I know we got Queens coming up right before that. Should be able to take care of business in that one as they're kind of sitting close to the 300 mark on KenPom for that one. Let's jump ahead to January 2nd. So right after New Year's, we get Syracuse coming to town to kind of, to me, really kick things off. It feels so weird playing these ACC games kind of just so early in the schedule. Again, like I mentioned before the break here, we are currently 0-1 with the loss down there in Atlanta to Georgia Tech. Got Syracuse coming up. As we get ready to head into this thing, first, let's just kind of pan out before we look through and go through it. KenPom's projecting 15-5 finish. I'll just kind of go around here. Shu, I'll go to you first. Top of your head, that track for you, that's four losses left in conference out of a 20-game slate. So,
yeah, I think I might have went 16-4. Before the our early season pod predictions, so I would probably, now that we've already dropped one, I would 15-5s. I like that.
So finishing out 15-4 rest of the way. Okay, yep. Roel, what about you? Four over under four?
Yeah, that was kind of 15-5 was kind of the number I had in my mind before even looking at that. I could see, 14-6 though. Just to kind of be realistic of where the team's at, I know they're clearly not a juggernaut. They're figuring things out. The offense is looking a lot better. And I do think, we discussed this off mic, but I do think the schedule plays out pretty favorably in terms of which teams we have at home versus on the road. So that'll help. I think 15-5 is pretty reasonable. There's definitely some tough games on the schedule. There's two or three where we're only favored by a couple points. And then, North Carolina, we're actually an underdog on the road.
Yeah.
So you assume we drop a couple of those ones where we're only favored by a couple points, and then maybe there'd be just a random loss that we shouldn't have at some point.
Sure, sure.
And hopefully not like a quad four loss.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the downfall is, while the ACC is not that great, they're all still going to be gunning for Duke, right, Carolina, and maybe Clemson as your only opportunities. John, for you, 0-1 to 15-5, is that feasible?
I think that's realistic. I mean, I'm looking at not only what you guys just talked about with the strength of schedule. There's a Saturday, Monday in late January, Clemson at home. Clemson may be the best team in the ACC right now besides Duke.
Yeah.
And then they play Clemson at home and then literally turn around and go to Virginia Tech, which is where Duke goes to die. Yeah. So there's that. There's another one. It's Boston College and Wake Forest back-to-back at home. And then there's another one that's difficult, that is Virginia at home and then turn around and go to Raleigh for state.
Now we know what happens in Raleigh. So,
yeah. So, I mean, those are – and then like you guys said, I mean, North Carolina is going to be a battle, a war. There's going to be a weird game somewhere. I mean, I'm looking at the Miami game in the middle of the week in mid-February, where, you go down and you play in that mausoleum of a stadium they have, and, Larinaga will just pick and roll them to death.
Yeah.
I think 15-5 is a reasonable plus or minus one. You know, last year they what? How many would they lose last year? Seven or eight? I mean, no. Yeah, seven or eight.
Seven or eight, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it's reasonable. I mean, let's, like we said, not a dominant team. A lot of youth still. And college basketball is crazy these days. And frankly, I mean, you know, Pittsburgh's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, like Raul said, I mean, the schedule is actually not too bad. I mean, you know, but I also worry about being a young team where things can just snowball. Yeah. I mean, like, you come out, they're going to beat Queens. We know that. Okay, you get Syracuse at home. You should win that game.
Syracuse at home with no students. I'm going to be in the student section on Tuesday because
there you go. Yeah,
and that's a great point. I mean, but then, you know, all of a sudden you get Notre Dame away. Notre Dame is not good, but again, they're a tough place to play at times. And then you literally turn around and go to Pittsburgh on the road. You know, that could be a tripping point.
And I believe that's our first Q1 opportunity. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I'm looking at that one pretty closely.
Yeah.
They play Pittsburgh twice in 10 days.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the Pittsburgh. The schedule is shaked out weird where we play Pitt and Georgia
Tech. Then we come right back home for Georgia Tech. And then we.
Yeah. It's like, all right, well, we've already played both of those teams twice and we haven't played like anybody else.
Yeah. That's a bit weird.
And then, John, you mentioned the game where we go at Clemson at home and then at Virginia Tech and then at Carolina.
Right after
those
that.
Three, yeah. All three of those three quad ones in a row right there.
Yeah, and it's
quad one opportunities in a row.
So they've got eight games in January. They're 0-1. Best case would be 8-1 at starting of February. You know, I think probably 7-2 is the most realistic.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, but then if you get down to like 6-3 or even 5-4, it's like, oh.
Yeah, 5-4 would be
we're in trouble.
A disaster.
Yeah. 6-3, if you lose at Pitt, if Clemson somehow gets you and then you lose at Virginia Tech, now you're heading into February limping. But it's not like, you know, you lose at Louisville, pack it up.
Yeah.
Just pack it up. I mean, you know, that's brutal. I think it goes without saying, and last year they were obviously elite at this, but it's this every year too, but it just really feels like with this schedule, it's like you just have to protect home court. You have to win these games at home. You only get Clemson and Cameron, got to take advantage of that. The road schedule is going to be kind of brutal. I mean, at Notre Dame, sure, you know, should win that, but then you follow it up with Pitt 3 days later. Middle end of February, you have a three-game road trip at FSU, at Miami, at Wake. I mean, these aren't your typical, but that could be 0-3, like straight up could be 0-3. You know, ideally you're not going to lose three there, but if you came out of that 1-2, you're not going to be stoked about it, but it's not unrealistic to come out of that 1-2. I mean, the Miami team has been really weird this year coming off a Final Four run. Have gotten blown out against the two good teams they have played. But when Duke gets to town and it's Wuga Poplar, Nigel Pack, and Omir and just ball screen torture, it's going to be kind of tough there. We'll see. I do think those are the biggest traps. You know, those three games at VT, at UNC, back-to-back is pretty brutal. We're all around 15-5. Is that good enough to win the conference then, I guess, is the best question.
Maybe. Obviously,
split,
it's just
maybe, you know,
tough to predict. 55? Yeah. Well, I think that was around what won the conference last year, right?
There
wasn't some team that went like 18-2 or anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for what it's worth, KenPom has us and Carolina both finishing 15-5 in his.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah.
I get come down to what's if we both split with each other. I don't know what the next tiebreaker is for.
I guess it would go head to head when if you're splitting.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If we're splitting.
If you're also splitting the matchup. Yeah.
It used to be record against the top of the league. So,
say if Clemson finished second, we beat them. We have them at home. Right. Does Carolina play Clemson?
So if Duke and Carolina finish 1-2 and Clemson finishes third, whoever had the best record against Clemson.
Right.
If that's tie, you keep going all the way down.
Yep.
Okay.
Which is where the unbalanced schedule really bites you.
Yep.
Yeah.
But for Duke this year, you know, maybe it's good, because if you take care of business and beat Clemson at home, they're going to get Clemson twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have Clemson twice. So
coming up soon too. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the first one.
I mean, there's all kinds of different ways, but it's, you know, I'm more interested in getting a top, obviously getting a double bye in the tournament. And you know, I look at it and, you know, just looking at all the years, I mean, it looks like, you know, they'll beat Louisville at the end of February. And then it seems like they could either solidify the momentum or lose it, regardless of what happens in Carolina, against Virginia and State, because those are two tough games on that Saturday-Monday turnaround. Mm-hmm. You win those games, you get a rivalry game at home with Carolina, you could really start stepping on the gas for March with those three games.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Especially if you go 3-0 right there. I mean, that would be huge. Because again, that's right off the back of that three game road trip. And so let's say you kind of stumble through that and you come out of there. Hopefully you don't drop two in a row, but maybe you do drop at Miami, at Wake. But if you come back and finish with four straight wins, maybe that kind of propels you a little bit. Obviously, you go 3-0 on the road. That's going to be a big time statement there.
And normally, I'd pencil in that State game as a loss, but we usually play State in January.
That's true.
When we always have our slump, right? We always have our slump in mid January. We always get that's State true. Then, and we lose by 20, and they score 95 points.
Yep.
So maybe it being in late February or early March, maybe that'll help us.
And we play them. State has a Saturday, Monday right before that.
Oh, nice.
So we play them on the Monday. They play Carolina at Carolina that Saturday. Mm-hmm. Okay. And they come home for Duke.
Tough turnaround for both teams.
Tough turnaround for them too, right? So that's, you know, we'll see. I think 15-5 is solid. I think 15-5 probably does win it. We haven't mentioned Virginia, and they're kind of all over the place, but they still could just be a team in this ACC that gets to 13-14 wins and is right there. You know, you hope you don't lose to them at home, but you know, stranger things have happened. You know, I mean, especially right there at the end of the season, you play Louisville and then you turn right around and play Virginia. It's not the best prep for getting ready to slow things down, but
we were talking about this off air a little bit too. I mean, you know, it's last year Clemson started out just gangbusters out of the mm-hmm. break, running away with the ACC, and then finish fifth, sixth, yeah, something like that. Yeah, I mean, it's a long season, long.
Yeah, very long season. And you don't know, what happens in these 15 games or so, right? If someone goes down for Duke, knock on wood, or if someone goes, like if Virginia loses Reese Beekman, they might not make the tournament, you know? Yeah, so here I am talking about them maybe winning the if Beekman goes down, they're out. If PJ Hall goes down for Clemson, that's huge. If RJ Davis gets hurt, right? Like if any of that happens, this thing gets kind of wonky really quickly. Miami is a team that maybe the talent's there, so maybe they finally kind of hit the potential and make a run at things. I do like this Pittsburgh team, and I don't want them to be Duke, but I want them to be good for Capel's, you know, standpoint to get a little bit of consistency there. I like Blake Henson. He's a big guy that can really do a lot for them. They lost some of their guards from last year.
They still have Federico.
They still got Federico squared. Yep. He's still in there. The Diaz Graham twins, I think, are still pogoing around somewhere out there. So, you know, he's got a pretty good roster too. So we'll see. But,
a little off topic. I didn't realize, how severe Virginia's splits are. Their offense is awful, man. 142nd offense and the third defense.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is not good.
And they've squeaked out some wins too. Like they beat Northeastern by 2, I think.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah. So
we really should beat them at home.
Yeah, we should, especially after what happened last year with Flip. Yep. You know, like I hope he circled that one, taking it a little personal there.
This is true. Yeah.
So, you know, there's reason maybe for optimism on that one. But let's talk a little bit about just all ACC predictions, and then we'll kind of get out of here. This might be kind of boring, but I guess first off, is anyone taking someone besides Flip to make all ACC? I guess there's like multiple teams. So let's go first team. Anyone besides Flip making first team?
Oh, Duke?
Yeah.
No.
I don't see it.
You don't see Roach staying hot this whole time?
Well, if he does that and he's averaging nine, but then again, it's going to be how many of those guards can they play? Yeah. How many
can they play? Played the last six games shooting, you know, what, 50, 55, 50, 80.
Yeah,
50, 50. Yeah, and averaging 20 points a game. Yeah, he makes it all day long. It's just.
Is that something
he can keep up? I hope this is who he's becoming as a senior. He's doing the Quinn, the Quinn Cook glow up.
Yeah, I mean, he's shown flashes of this before, like 6 or 7 game stretches before in his career. So it's just
a question of whether. Final four in 22, right? Yeah. So it's like, can it be extended?
And even the end of last year during that 10 game winning streak, he was great too.
He
was
awesome. And he's really, it's not just that his game has matured.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
decision making.
Absolutely. When we were talking the Baylor game, I was actually tweeting before it happened. I was like, you know, it seems like we haven't heard from him. And in the past, he would just, you know, put his head down and barrel into the paint. Now he's picking his spots, you know, moving without the ball. He's controlling the offense. I mean, he's really an unsung hero, even as good as he's been. And I mean, yeah, if he keeps this up, he's definitely making first team. But, you know, we've had 3 years of flashes. You know, if he puts it all together, then yeah, he's a shoe-in. But you know, let's see. I mean, I hope he does, because boy, do they need him.
Yeah. We'll be interesting to see what his numbers look like when Proctor does. Now, he was doing some of this with Proctor, but when that comes back, what really happens now that McCain's kind of taken a step? Foster's probably still going to play 20 plus minutes. So it's.
Yeah, I see some of that coming down a little bit. But the thing is, he's doing it. His efficiency is great.
It's if not the like efficiency he's taking, stays,
it's then, not like he's taking 20 shots. He's taking 9, 10 shots.
Yeah.
My concern is that you've got a Kyrie and Nolan situation. Where and that hadn't been nearly as long. You know, it's only been what, 1, 2, 3, 4 games. It's not that long. But I mean, you know, Nolan was great, and then Kyrie came back, was on the ball, and it was just like that was it.
Yeah.
I wonder, you know, because with Foster, he's doing the blue collar stuff. He's bringing the ball up the court. He's beating the press. You know, Roach is able to kind of. Still be the alpha when they get over midcourt. Like they give him the guard as the lead guard, they give him the ball.
Yeah.
Wonder if Proctor's going to, you know, how that works together. Cause I've never really gotten the feeling that they have their games just don't mesh seamlessly all the time. I don't know how best to describe it. It's just weird because Roach is unquestionably the guy when the freshmen are on the court.
Yeah.
When Proctor's on the court. I'm not saying that there's ill will or anything like that, bad chemistry, nothing like that. I'm just the way their game.
The play style is different. So
I wonder how that plays into all this, because you've got to play both of them.
Yeah.
Unless Shire just wants to do the Kentucky thing and just do platoons. And you basically just have Roach and one of the freshmen or both the freshmen. And on the second team, you put Proctor, Blakes, and, you know, one other one. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's options.
Yeah. There's options for sure. I don't know. I mean, at this point, I think Roach is at least showing that, like, when's the last time this kid missed a mid-range jump shot, right? Like that just seems to be automatic at this point.
The other thing is his catch and shoot threes are really, really good right now. So maybe that helps a little bit when Proctor comes back. Because I think the problem in the past is like they both kind of need to operate on the ball. So figuring out that dynamic was tough. So if Roach can, you know, operate more as a spot up guy, that might help.
Yeah. Because he's mastered that pocket pass, right? That little like coming off the screen, that little, it's like watching, like Remember the Titans, where you got to make the pitch. You can throw it a mile, but you got to make the pitch. He's got the pitch. Like that is just money. It doesn't matter if it's Ryan Young. We saw the role with McCain. Him and Flip have just like really synced up. And the defense has got to know it's coming, that he's going to do the little short bounce pass, but he's able to thread that. And I would put Proctor as the better passer overall, but in that dynamic right there, Roach has been just really, really good in ball screens. Going to be interesting to see what they do. Maybe they load him and Mitchell up on one side if like Proctor and Flip are in a pick and roll. So if you do have to kick, then Mitchell just screens right away for Roach, or vice versa. Maybe they get into some stuff like that. You know, we'll see. So no takers, I guess, for anyone outside of Flip.
Maybe Roach.
Maybe Roach. Do we think Foster, McCain, one of those guys could sneak into Rookie of the Year consideration as a Frosh here. I haven't done my research across the conference in terms of like who's really pushing.
I know
that.
Pitt had a freshman that was
awesome
at least
for a while.
Of the year. And I haven't checked in on him in a while.
McCain could do it. His ability to shoot, if he keeps shooting like this, you could see his scoring numbers creep up and his efficiency creep up too. I think he would be the better bet than Foster.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I think Foster's role is going to be pushed back a little bit more as Proctor comes back.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
Is there one all freshman team? Is that how it works?
They pick five and then a rookie of the year.
Yeah.
So we'll probably get one on that team, I'm guessing.
I would think
maybe two.
Guard depth. I think the guard depth will just erase the second guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Because like you saw at the beginning of the season, Foster was amazing against Michigan, won the game against Michigan State, then disappears. McCain all of a sudden is struggling. Now McCain's starting to get it going.
Yeah.
It's just, and now you're going to add Proctor back to it.
Yeah. Not enough shots.
Just so many minutes.
I don't know any other freshmen or monk around the league, you know.
Georgia Tech center,
if he's going to go for 21 or go back to his normal three.
Who knows what Cadeau ends up becoming at Carolina, right? Like, he's thrown flashes of being able to really be like an elite creator. I don't know if he'll score enough, but.
Yeah. And he's got the media bias. Behind him. I mean, you know, Baycott's going to win ACC Player of the Year no matter what. I mean, I would think.
RJ steals it from him.
Yeah, it could be RJ.
Yeah, exactly. One of those two. Let's see. I'm trying to go through and look if anybody had good freshman.
There's so many ACC teams now that it's like tough to remember. There's got to be four other freshmen that are playing well. I don't know. You know, it's obviously a very old sport at this point. So you might be right, Shu.
And then maybe their teams are just going to not be nowhere near good enough to just get consideration that maybe you just need to.
I mean, because Clemson's all older guys, Georgia Tech, the freshman was the center.
Right. It's kind of that one of those things where even if you do have freshmen, they're probably not playing because you've got like five seniors on your team.
Yeah.
Aside from the kid who spurned Louisville to go somewhere else, and Louisville's got like a developmental center. The guard for Virginia. I don't even know if he's playing.
Yeah, I haven't seen him.
I haven't looked across the whole league as much as I should yet.
Yeah, me either.
Notre Dame's got a power forward. I'm going through the top 100 from last year.
Right.
The ACC did not have a lot of good.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're right. Maybe we get two just because they got to fill out the roster. And it's like if Duke
gets
15
McCain and
5,
Foster can definitely make it. McCain, Foster, Cadeau, and then two more kids, you know?
Pittsburgh's got a bunch of guys that were ranked like 60 to 90.
Yeah.
One of those is the kid that was going for like, it was averaging like 15 or 16.
I think that's the Carlton Carrington kid who's been pretty daggone good for them, I think. He might could probably, and Pitt's good enough to where they probably get one in.
They've got a point guard who's starting for them, who's a freshman. They've got, so the point guard is the big freshman. He's doing really well, it looks like.
Yeah.
He's their second best player, so you would think he would make it.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's just an older league.
Slim pickings.
It gets pretty bleak after that. I mean,
it's just funny that we've only got two freshmen that are playing, and they might both make the all-rookie team.
Yeah, because they have to.
Yeah, exactly.
The kid from State could potentially, if his role gets big enough, the Dennis Parker kid, he's shown some pretty decent stuff. So
Louisville starts a freshman point guard. Louisville starts a freshman point guard.
But they're so bad.
I got it, but it might just be throwing a bone saying they are in the league still.
That's true.
Technically.
Dennis Parker starts for State as a power forward. He's like their seventh best player according to
I know.
I mean, it's just like you say, it's an old league, but I mean, you know, Clemson you know, they picked up transfers. Pitts picked up transfers. I mean, it's an old league.
Yeah, it is. Looking through it, it definitely is.
Yeah. And Duke will be old next year, which is something we haven't been able to say for however long.
On that subject, are you seeing both Foster and McCain as coming back at this point?
Oh, John? Yeah, that was always the plan. I mean, you know, I know our message boards want to anoint every freshman who comes in as the next greatest thing in the world. And let's be honest, to be fair, that's what it was for a decade.
Yeah.
You know, the freshmen came in and were alphas. But I mean, you know, I tell people, look at how they're recruiting. They didn't recruit a point guard in this class. They expect Foster to be the point guard. I mean, he was the number one point guard before he left Oak Hill and then went to California and turned into a scoring guard.
Yeah,
but he was the number one point guard. I mean, when they got him to commit, I mean, Shire loved him in high school.
Yeah.
Because he was big guard. John sees you remember when we had him on off air a little bit, when we had him on the podcast before he jumped in, you know, John is very cognizant of his playing career. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, he's told me many times, we've talked about, you know, who's going to be your point guard? And he'll go, well, who was the point guard on the 2010 team? It's like, well, it was that 6'5 shooting guard who
decided to have the best assist to turnover ratio in the country for 6 months.
Get a Kyrie. You can get a Ty Lawson, a Raymond Felton. You know, you can get a Bobby Hurley. If you can get these kind of point guards, that's great. That's absolutely great. But I mean, really, what you need is a game manager who can run and score. And there's just not a lot of those because they're not good. You're not going to get an old one of those. Mm-hmm. You're just not, because they're going to go to the league because the league values them.
Yeah.
So I without having have him said this directly, I kind of feel sometimes he's looking for guys who can, they're smart enough, mature enough, and their game is capable enough to play multiple positions, including point guard.
Right.
People are screaming, you know, well, we don't have a Tyus Jones. We don't have a Trey Jones. You know, it's like, yeah, because they go to the league in a year.
Yeah.
I mean, you want an old point guard, he's going to have some kind of warts in a traditional measuring system.
Yeah.
You know, Jeremy Roach is a senior guard, but came in as a point guard, hasn't played point guard in 3.5 years.
Yeah.
True. Yeah.
And Duke has always been at their best when we've had multiple ball handlers and multiple people capable of running the point. When you think about all the championship teams, you know, you have the Jay Will, the Duhon, you have John Shire and Nolan Smith. They're really kind of both point guards. I like that approach.
Yeah.
Well, and even in 92, when you had Bobby Hurley, Grant Hill played point forward.
Yeah.
You know, Hill could rip it and go.
Yeah. And just look at the league too, right? Like most of the like best point guards in the league are your best scorers too, right? Obviously Curry goes without saying, Lillard's up there, SGA.
Halliburton.
If you call Luka, you call Halliburton point guard. These guys, you have to be dynamic. And so you're looking at a Foster, especially as a sophomore Foster, and him and McCain, like you said, potato potato, right? Like call yourself point guards or shooting guards, whichever, but those two guys together, I would imagine would be in control of getting us into our stuff. Let's, you know, get the ball off the floor.
Yeah, the whole 8-8 model is kind of dead, you know. Point guard who scores 8 points and gets 8 assists. Which has actually sort of been the problem with Proctor this year, is he's just not
the scoring hasn't really scoring. Been there. Yep.
Passing's been there.
Question kind of is, you know, what position is Tyrese Proctor? Like physically, he should be in college. He should be a 2 or a 3.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Same thing with Caleb Foster. Both of them need the ball in their hands because that's what they do. That's their game.
Yeah.
It's just interesting to see. But to answer your question, I expect them both back. The variable there to me is going to be what Jaylen Blake's does, because I'm pretty sure he can graduate after this year.
Yep.
You know, is he going to be a Jordan Goldwire and come in and be that guy? I mean, he's not going to start next year. But boy, they having that pure – and he's not really a pure point guard, but – you know, they're going to have a bunch of guys coming in who can play in the backcourt. And, you know, Jaden Shute's going to come off red shirt.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's you're not going to have a Chris Paul style point guard. You're not going to have a Tyus Jones. It's not going to happen. But the plan, to answer the original question, was always to have Foster come in and play at least a year or two. But then you look at 2025, they're recruiting several point guards in that class.
Yeah.
Now, whether that's because they think McCain's going to leave, Foster's going to leave, whatever, but you know, they've got a ton of guards in 2024 as well. So it's, I think it's more about positionless basketball to a point.
I wouldn't blame Blakes if he wanted to go somewhere else for his last year and start. If he went to a mid-major, he could play 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, I think
he could go to like 90% of the ACC schools.
Probably. Yep. Probably just started right?
Georgia Tech. Look how bad these teams are. Yeah.
Jalen Blake's at Virginia. Terror under in that.
If they could slow him down, right? Like Bennett trying to be like, hey, walk the ball up the court. Jalen's going to be like, what are you talking about? There's only one speed.
I got one speed, bro. Balls to the wall.
But I mean, yeah, he would absolutely. I mean, like you said, there's several teams, Big East, Big 12, who Big 10, he would be a terror. Like, who knows? But yeah, I think those two are going to come back and they're going to be your starting backcourt next year. And then, you know, hopefully they can, Shire can finish up. They need a wing next year badly, a pure wing. The Edgecombe kid is, he's the real deal. It's just, does he want to come in?
Yeah. A lot of guys already there. Right? Yeah. So it's a huge class if he comes. It's a big class.
A lot of guys in that 6'5" kind of range too, you know, between Harris and.
And you got to figure out the Mitchell thing.
And, yeah.
Right?
Like, and Mitchell.
Where is he going?
Yeah, so the Mitchell thing is interesting because he's not – Cooper Flagg would start this year. Quite frankly, VJ Edgecombe would start this year. You got a 6'5 terror on defense who can elevate like Gerald Henderson. He's going to play.
Yeah.
Mitchell is interesting next year because the question becomes, you know, is the center they've got out of Virginia Catholic Catholic is he going to be an immediate impact guy?
I just had foot surgery too, I think, or something like that. So he's already in.
He's out the rest of the season.
Full blown Duke mode ready already, but
he'll be able to. You know, the good news is that he'll be able to get to campus early, and he actually gets to spend the entire summer with the strength and conditioning program. So that's not a terrible thing.
That's true,
because they'll be able to rehab him. Cognizant of that injury and build him up, but still, how many freshman centers come in and dominate?
Especially if they're not ranked in the top 10, you know, like if you get Okafor, of course, but what is he ranked, like 26?
He's more in the Bolden range, I think, in terms of, and maybe even in terms of like play style, Whittle kind of heavy footed. And
they're looking at from the NBA Academy in Africa, who's 7'2".
I like that kid.
Yeah.
You know, Wembanyama went to the NBA and he's getting he's productive,
but he's getting some welcome to the league moments though too. He's getting some.
So it's, you know, there are things that people need to realize with that. So I don't think it's unreasonable to think of, you know, would Duke literally start a front court of Mitchell, Flag, a big wing and two guards, and then have a guard depth with, you know, you got Christian Reeves as a third year player at that point. You've got the freshman center is coming in. Is that enough? Maybe. I mean, you know, Mark Mitchell, I think he told you guys at Media Day, what, he's like 230, something like that.
Yeah.
Another year in the weight room. He's 6'9", 235. I mean, Lance Thomas played like 255 his senior year.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's not, and you know, Zubek became Zubek, but not until the last 8 games of the season.
Yeah. It was after that Maryland game. Yeah. You know, good problems to have. Maybe we'll see. I think the talent is coming in though, so that's, you know, obviously going to be big time. Flag's going to play as much as he can, so that anytime you can have him on the floor, you got a good shot.
Hopefully Sean Stewart's ready for next
TJ
year.
TJ Power, one of those guys. Yeah,
people need to not give up on Sean Stewart right now. I mean, he could not play against Baylor because they would have picked them apart.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were talking about offline. When Flip goes to defend a driver with the ball trying to block a layup, that's fine. Nobody rotates over.
Mm-hmm.
Help.
It's open season on offensive rebounds.
Yeah. Physically, Sean Stewart should make a career as that secondary post defender. The problem is you look and Sean Stewart's guarding somebody in the third row. And so I mean, it's just, and he chases the ball, and that's okay, but it takes time. And, you know, unfortunately they couldn't play him against a top 10 team. They just couldn't. And, you know, our message boards, as I'm sure you guys have seen, just love the theory of what he could be. Everybody wants him to be the second coming of Tyrus Thomas from that LSU team. And that would be amazing. He's just not there positionally yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it'll come.
Let him run his race, right? Like, there's no reason why he needs to be that right now. I think it's glaring because the team has struggled and everyone's looking for, like, okay, where's the magic, like, button to insert player X, and all of a sudden things take off.
Well, that happens every year, right? Like, last year, right. Everybody
went, it's always somebody,
because we weren't shooting well, right?
Yeah, like, it's always
backup quarterback syndrome, right? And he clearly has the best physical tools of anybody on the team. So I think that's why people latch onto him.
100%. And it's, you know, we saw the potential. What was the game? He had a double-double. I mean, he was just.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a mid-major team. Yep. You know, it's a good coach is going to, you know, put him in a ball screen. And like I said, he's just going to be lost.
Yeah. Yep. Just not quite there yet. Same for TJ, too. Or for different reasons, like physicality and stuff. But just the mental aspect, they haven't quite got there.
That just goes back to what we talked about at the beginning. It's a young team. Yeah, I know we have continuity from year one to year two. There's still a bunch of, you know, young players, and there's a reason they're sophomores. I mean, you know, I know it's been 12 to 15 years of, you know, the best thing about freshmen is you get more of them the next year. Once went to the NBA.
Yeah.
But there's a reason these guys came back, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But it's the reality is Duke is rebuilding, and they're just doing it at a high level. And that's okay.
Yep.
But, you know, people expecting there to be a Zion or something. It's like, that's, I don't know that there is a. And next year with Flag, you know, people are expecting this guy to come in and average a double-double. It's not going to happen.
Right. Yeah, he's just not that kind of guy, right? Yeah. He's going to be like the 13, 7, 4, 3, 2, 5, right. You know, that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He's going to be that guy. And, you know, it's. The expectations will be crazy because he's the number one player. He reclassed. He's the number one player. And he's good. Like he is that level. He is in the Bagley, the, you know, the Zion, but he impacts the game in ways that are not just, you know, scoring a bunch.
It's kind of like Lively last year, right? That's what everybody asked about Lively. This is number one player. Why is he not averaging
20 and 10? And 20. It's like, that's not really what he does, right? And then unless he's in the NBA, and then
unless he has Luka to throw lobs at him, right?
Yeah. And then he's 20-10 all night.
Lively's best game last year was the Carolina game where he scored what, 1 point?
He didn't score for like the first 37 minutes, but he had 8 blocks, and
he changed the way I haven't seen in I don't know how, but it's there's different ways to win a basketball game, and it's not just being, you know, Jabari Parker who can score whenever he wants. He just can't defend, you know, Bagley who's going to score 25, 30 points a game, but he's going to give up 25 or 30
doesn't
points.
Doesn't even know what defense is. Yeah. Right.
You literally have to change your whole team defense to suit him.
Yeah. Hence the zone. Right. Yep. I mean, you just, so. I mean, there's optimism, I think, though, right? Like, there's optimism. And like we said, it's the time for resolutions and looking forward. So we have a whole ACC slate. And John, you talked about this a lot, and then we're going to get out of here, I promise. But, you know, I think it's adjustment for Duke fans to not jumping out of the gate 15-0, 14-1, 18-2, like we had forever. But maybe we start to see that again. John went 10-0 down the stretch last year. I'd like to see more of that, right? Like, let's hit February, March, and really start clicking. And this team's kind of set up to be able to do the same thing here. So, you know, maybe we'll see a little bit of that in 2024. But anyway, I know we ran a little bit long here. I'm going to get out of here. Want to thank John for coming on. Rate, review, subscribe. You can find us in all the usual places. You can find us on the boards at thedevilsden.com. You can email us at thedevilsdenpod@gmail.com. You can find us on X/Twitter/ whatever it's going to be next year at devilsdenpod247. You know, good luck on all your resolutions. You know what we're going to do over here. We're hoping for a little bit of a stronger face and more verve. Go Duke.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.